Thanks for watching us on 38th The Spot. We've got Stan Weber in studio. Then we're going to talk to Gary Lezak, Mike McFarland, Tim Grunhardt. We've got Nate Buchady out at the Advent Health Championship at Blue Hills Country Club. The show continues with Stan Weber in studio right now on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services. Walker Medical Linen specializes in bed linens, towels, scrubs, and lab coats. Family owned and operated for over 140 years. Find out why hospitals of all sizes, surgery centers, and medical clinics trust Walker Medical Linen. Online at walkermls.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Stan Weber in studio on this Friday, May 20th. 2022, the weather is going to cool down quite a bit. We'll hear from Gary Lezak about that. But right now, Nate Buchady, please tell us where you are at today and what's going on around you.
I'm currently stuffing my face with an omelet and some breakfast potatoes. I have a mimosa. I have a Bloody Mary. Actually, Hartzell has the mimosa. But I'm here at the Advent Health Corn Ferry Classic, where we are getting ready to watch some of the best golfers in the country as they will be competing over the next 3 days. The first group teed off about 5 minutes ago here today. But you can come out here. And, I mean, I will tell you, I watched this tournament. I came out on Saturday last year with my very angry father and then my nephews and my son. And we were here for, I mean, we watched probably 2-3 hours of golf. We followed a couple of the groups around and watch them play. These guys are unbelievable players. And it makes you realize, like, wow, if these guys are one step away from the PGA Tour, how good must the guys on the PGA Tour be? And talking to the people out here, the margins are incredibly thin. I mean, it's kind of like we're talking about college football right now, and you see the greatest players in college football play, and you realize, like, yeah, they belong in the NFL, and they're going to be stars in the NFL, and that's who some of these guys are out here. And you can get tickets to come watch it right here in Kansas City. I mean, it's really cool to have an event like this in Kansas City. AdventHealthChampionship.com. AdventHealthChampionship.com, and they have all kinds of different hospitality options that you can go with, different suites, different specialty holes where you can have all you can eat, all you can drink. You can get all the details at AdventHealthChampionship.com if you want to entertain some clients, if you want to come out with your family. All those different options are here. And I saw from Lindsey Anderson that, I mean, it was 75 degrees when I got here today, which makes you think, oh, man, it's going to be hot. But there's a cold front pushing through here in the next hour or two, and it's going to be like in the 60s and 70s all day long.
Beautiful weather.
And I think this weekend is going to be great weather. So this is a beautiful golf course. Some of the best golfers in the country, guys that are going to be starring on the PGA Tour before you know it. And you can come see it right here in your own backyard. So come on out and get your tickets at AdventHealthChampionship.com.
And, of course, everyone's talking golf right now because it's the PGA Championship taking place down in Southern Hills Country Club in Tulsa. Rory McIlroy is right now atop the leaderboard, 5-under. And one note, John Daly, who fired a 72, 2-over. Somebody tweeted me a picture of him leaving a local Hooters after his round, smoking a cigarette, getting into the courtesy car, heading back to the golf course. So keeping it real for John Daly, heading out to Hooters and a quick smoke after his better-than-expected round, Stan Weber. So you have to appreciate his ability to keep things real, right?
Absolutely, and he made his entree into the golf world, at least to the big time, right? to the PGA Tour when he was an alternate who was the last one allowed to be in when things sorted out at the PGA Championship, and he went on to win it. I don't know how many years ago that was. Was it 20 years ago? But that's how we found out about John Daly ripping the ball down the middle and just being cool and calm. And someone sent me, I don't know if it's just a joke or real, but what he intook while he played golf yesterday, and I think maybe it was just a joke, but it was talking about a lot of cigarettes and a lot of drinks that Todd Lebo would not be drinking, like a lot of soda.
I saw
things
someone,
like that. Is that? Did you see that?
It was actually something that was regurgitated from a round of golf that he played in 2008. So it was real.
Oh, okay.
It just wasn't from yesterday, but people
okay.
were. I saw that too.
They were popping it up.
21 cigarettes, 12 Diet Cokes, and zero bottles of water for
yes.
a round of golf.
No H2O.
Which,
and, right. and there was food in there, too. There were some snacks.
Yeah, well, of course there are.
These Why are not Lebo's
oh, no, no.
snacks.
No, six packages of peanut M&Ms.
Okay.
So how would that power you through a round of golf, Nate? Six packages of peanut M&Ms, 12 Diet Cokes, and 21 cigarettes with no water. Would that be fine for you?
I think I could do everything but the cigarettes.
I love peanut M&Ms, I can tell you that.
Oh, man, delicious.
Could've six packs like
Oh,
that.
My gosh.
I love them.
Usually one bag of peanut M&Ms is good enough for me, but I do like peanut M&Ms a lot.
Nate's going to smoke a cigarette during the 9 o'clock hour, so we'll see how
You know, I've never
can...
had a cigarette in my entire life.
Congratulations. That's good. That's
now,
something to be
proud of. What are the chances that three people who aren't young are on the radio as a sample size, and two of them never had a cigarette in their life?
That's a big deal.
So.
I was never a
oh,
smoker.
I think Steven's probably had one.
Well, Stan hasn't.
Oh, wait. Okay.
I was
right.
making a joke.
I thought Steven was number three. No.
No, I
match you with that. No cigarettes yet in my life.
Yeah, yeah. You know, when I was... Hey,
we're not as cool as you.
No, I'm not.
I feel
when
lame.
I was 12
I
or 13,
lame.
I tried pretty much everything, Stan.
Well,
you know, my grandfather used to have me smoke his cigars when I was like 11. So.
Well, let's don't. Yeah, let's don't act like it was a different era yeah. that people were handing me cigarettes and
oh,
saying,
yeah.
"You want to?" No, I'm 7 years old.
Right.
Because everybody smoked. It seemed like I could see myself literally as a 7 year old on the porch with a bunch of relatives around and everyone having a good time and sitting there and people were smoking cigarettes and. And my dad was sitting right there by me when they said, hey, do you want one? And he didn't go, don't do that to a seven-year-old. He was
right.
like, you let me decide. I said, no, thank you.
Let him try.
No, thank you. Not this time. And I've just been able to say that since.
And that's something to be proud of. Don't smoke, kids. Now let's get back into the comments from Nick Saban as we ramp up to the replies from Jimbo Fisher. All right, let's go to Saban's comment number three. He says that NIL is not going away.
Name, image, and likeness is something that's here. And I think the more supporters that we have for the University of Alabama in all sports that are willing to sponsor players, whatever you want to call it, use them in your business to help your business, that's going to help our programs. The thing that I fear is at some point in time, they're just going to say we're going to have to pay players. If we start paying players, we're going to have to eliminate sports. And this is all bad for college sports. I mean, we probably have, 450 people on scholarship at Alabama, whether they're women's tennis players, women's softball players, golfers, you know, baseball players, non-revenue sports that have for years and years and years been able to create a better life for themselves because they've been able to get scholarships and participate in college athletics. That's what college athletics is supposed to be. It's not supposed to be something where people come and make money. And you make a decision about where you go to school based on how much money you're going to make. You should make a decision based on where you have the best chance to develop as a person, as a student, and as a player, which is what we've always tried to major in. And we're going to continue to do that. And hopefully there's enough people out there that want to do it. But I know the consequence is going to be difficult for the people who are spending tons of money to get players. And you've read about them. You know who they are. I mean, we were second in recruiting last year. A&M was first. A&M bought every player on their team, made a deal for name, image, and likeness. All right, we didn't buy one player. All right, but I don't know if we're going to be able to sustain that in the future because more and more people are doing it.
Stan Weber.
A seed is planted, and the nation will follow. He was, again, just staying pretty disciplined, even though he let in one little hint that was inconsistent. He was... basically, if you've been listening to us all day today, he's done a nice job of explaining what's going on, what some of the ramifications are, and everything else. But then he, in the middle of it, begged for money from Alabama. You know, like, we really would like to have all you guys, you know, find reason to pay our players.
And see, and that's what Jimbo says later
that's,
on.
That's goes, what's a joke. Yeah.
Didn't he just ask for money?
He went away. He did. And so he's kind of trying to stick to the facts, but he got a little recruiting statement into his alumni. Like, are you going to just let A&M's alumni step all over you? Don't you have some money? Let's get going here. But mostly he's done a nice job of summarizing kind of an old school mentality, setting the tone for what the rules are, what might change, what might be different. But then he slipped up at the end and said every one of the Texas A&M players were purchased this year. And that's why we got out-recruited. And here we go. And that started a little reaction.
I love the lack of self-awareness, though, of that's not what college was supposed to be. You're not supposed to come here and make money. That's what he said there. That college wasn't supposed to be a thing where you come and make money. He's making, what, $11.6 million a year to coach those kids? Was that what college was supposed to be? I mean, you know, like the universities, the coaches, the conferences have nobody but themselves to blame for all that because they made it all about money a long time ago. The whole reason that Texas A&M is in the SEC is because it's all about money. You know, like Alabama has been winning and crushing it in football, not just because of money, because they got a great coach for sure. That's why they pay him $11.6 million, because he's worth every cent of it, by the way. He's worth more than probably $11.6 million when it comes to how much money he brings into that state and into that university and everything like that. But that university spends more money on players in terms of all the facilities they get. You think the K-State and KU can compete with Alabama when it comes to the facilities and all the other amenities that those players get or how much their coach gets paid? You know, so, like, to me, it's that is hilarious to listen to a man who makes $11.6 million a year saying that college isn't supposed to be about making money. You guys did this yourselves, and now you're surprised that everybody's going to be like, wait, we want our cut. We see how much everybody else is making off this. We want some too. That's the part where you lose me. It's like, you know, to sit there and gripe about where it's headed because that's not what college is supposed to be. Well, you guys ruined that a long time ago when you took $1 billion for the NCAA tournament from TV partners, and you started breaking up rivalries and conferences for TV contracts and handing out this kind of money. It's been about money for a long, long time.
Okay, and a simple one to add to Nate's statement. If it were a little bit more about idealism of what all this should be, that student athlete is part of a great adventure at the university and it's about academics and opportunities and all these things, here's a simple one that has nothing to do with firing at him because he makes money. I mean, it's okay to say rich guys shouldn't be talking about the players not getting money. I know that's a theme that a lot of people like to use, and it's very relevant. But here's one, I think, to prove your money statement. Why is it that the old-fashioned activity of having 6 or 7 home games on a Saturday at the university is the biggest celebration of that university? People come on campus, a lot of different activities, go to their fraternities and sororities and their dorms, just flood the city with a great feeling of focusing in on academics and football, right? But that was done in a way that when they kicked off at 1 o'clock, it worked very well for people to travel a distance, to know what lunchtime was going to be and what after-game activities were going to be planned at the university. How about this? They may not tell you till 6 days before the game what time your game is. So now you're in the psychology department and you're trying to have a big event for alumni who are going to come back and feel like they want to be a part of Alabama football but also do other things this day, and they have to wait, and then they say game time's at 11 or game time's at 7:30. I mean, they've sold out completely for the money. They don't even control the activity, and that's one of the biggest ones. For the people who actually go to the games, guys, how awful is it that they can't plan when they're going to go and the times stink? How many OU fans are mad about trying to go to Norman every week for, you know, get Todd Lebo on the phone. What time is the kickoff going to be? 11 o'clock. How many 11 o'clock kickoffs has Oklahoma had the last 5 years? I mean, you cannot have a great university day when people are crawling out of bed early in the morning and trying to make it to an 11 o'clock kickoff.
Stan, the best game that's probably on Oklahoma's schedule is going to be played in Fort Worth at the Jerry Jones Dome or some other big building at a big city somewhere. It's not going to be played on campus, right? Like, and it's and that's kind of fun. It's fun for television and all that. But if it's about Old State U and helping the in universities, how come the best team that the best game on every major university's schedule now is at an NFL stadium in a big city? Yeah. That's not about Old State.
Leading
U,
with
it?
Alabama, who usually starts their season at a neutral site in a game. Like, what are they doing in Dallas playing at AT&T Stadium to kick off the season? Because they're Alabama, you know. So definitely you can't have it both ways. The money is driving things as simple as kickoff times.
All right, let's hear this last clip from Nick Saban before we get to Jimbo Fisher.
People blame the NCAA. But in defense of the NCAA, we are where we are because of the litigation that the NCAA gets, like the transfer portal. Every time somebody wanted to transfer, they'd apply for a waiver. If you didn't give them, if the NCAA didn't give them a waiver so they could be immediately eligible, they filed suit. So the NCAA would back off and give them a waiver. So they just said, we're just going to make a rule where everybody can transfer. That's how that happened. So if the NCAA doesn't get some protection from litigation, whether we got to get an antitrust or whatever it is, from a federal government standpoint, this is not going to change because they cannot enforce their rules, just like Nate said. We have a rule right now that says you cannot use name, image, and likeness to entice a player to come to your school. Hell, read about it in the paper. I mean, Jackson State paid a guy $1 million last year that was a really good Division I player to come to school. It was in the paper, and they bragged about it. Nobody did anything about it. I mean, these guys at Miami that are going to play basketball there for $400,000, it's in the newspaper. The guy tells you how he's doing it. So, but the NCAA can't enforce their rules because it's not against the law. And that's an issue. That's a problem. And unless we get something that protects them from litigation, I don't know what we're going to do about it.
He distracted me because he's talking about Nate Buchady and Nigel Pack, our guys around here. Did he say Nate said?
He said he saw it in the news. Who sees anything in the newspaper anymore? Who the hell sees anything in the paper? What is he talking about?
When I was looking
about?
Through the classified ads.
Yeah, I was looking at it. I saw that in the newspaper. No, you didn't. You didn't see anything in the newspaper.
That should actually be a compliment because it's all above board, not how it used to be done. Because we talk, you know, you laugh about guys getting money from one school and then them going to another. The famous one is Eric Dickerson, who got a Camaro from Texas A&M and then went to SMU. It may not have been a Camaro, but it was a car like that.
Right.
And he drove that at SMU because the dealership guy at A&M who was trying to get him to go to A&M by cheating couldn't call his car back, right? So Eric Dickerson said, yeah, I kept the car. Just didn't happen to go to A&M. So at least it's all above board. I mean, the Nigel Pack stuff is perfectly the way it should be done. There's no hiding anything. He's going like, these are within the rules, and this is what we're doing. But, man, old Nick Saban firing away. Now he's got Deion Sanders and Jackson State.
Hell, read about it in the paper.
He was in he was on Sirius XM Radio. Nick Saban was yesterday. He said, I should have never singled anyone out. That was a mistake. I apologize for that. And so then Deion Sanders made some comments yesterday and said, let's talk publicly and let everyone hear the conversation. You can't do that publicly and call privately. No, no, no. I still love him. I admire him. I respect him because he's earned that. But he took a left when he should have stayed right. I'm sure he'll get back on course. I ain't tripping.
They do Aflac commercials together, right?
Right. Why is he throwing Deion under the bus?
A little money.
So let's hear now Jimbo Fisher and first his reaction yesterday to Nick Saban's comments.
First of all, I'll say it's a shame that we have to do this. It's really despicable. It's despicable that somebody can say things about somebody and an organization. More importantly, 17-year-old kids. You're taking shots at 17-year-old kids and their families. And they broke state laws. They're all money. We bought every player on this group. We never bought anybody. No rules were broken. Nothing was done wrong. It was all in the way we do things, the ethics in which we do things. And these families, it's despicable that a reputable head coach could come out and say this when he doesn't get his way or things don't go his way. The narcissist in him doesn't allow those things to happen. And it's ridiculous. But when he's not on top, and the parity in college football he's been talking about, go talk to coaches who coach for him. You'll find out all the parity. Go dig into wherever he's been. You can find out anything. And it's a shame that you got to sit here and defend 17-year-old kids and families and Texas A&M because we do things right. We're always going to do things right. But we're always going to be here. We're doing a heck of a job. These coaches have done a great job. Our players have done a great job. The whole organization of recruiting people. It's despicable that we got to sit here at this level of ball and say these things to defend the people of this organization, the kids, 17-year-old kids, and their families.
So just to add to this, there's an article now at The Athletic that was posted this morning. No love lost between Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher. Inside the prickly relationship that boiled over. And so they dig back into the background of all this, and it starts off, it says, it often felt to some observers that there were two groups at SEC coaches' meetings, the Nick Saban guys and the others. One former SEC coach said, everybody's kissing Saban's ass like a big fraternity. In the breaks between meetings, all the Saban people are laughing and joking like they were brothers, but they're saying it wasn't like that with Jimbo Fisher. He said that there was one staffer who worked with both coaches at LSU said there was friction all the time. Will Muschamp and Kirby Smart and all the defensive guys all bowed down to Nick, but Nick depended on Jimbo a lot. But Nick is so hard on his offensive coordinators, they were always at each other's throats. Said every Saturday morning, whether they were in Baton Rouge or Florida or a high school parking lot about to meet a recruit, Saban had a mandatory recruiting meeting for his assistants. He would bring the old speakerphone from his office, place it in the center of the table, and anybody not in attendance would call in. One former staffer said that drove Jimbo crazy. And just it goes on and on, all these different details. And it said Jimbo would always complain about things Nick would say or do and always talked about the Bowdens. Jimbo was big on the Bowdens, and he just couldn't stand what Nick was trying to do. Fisher played and coached under Terry Bowden at Samford and later followed him to Auburn. He left LSU in 2007 to be Hall of Fame coach Bobby Bowden's head coach in waiting at Florida State. So kind of details that his relationship was different than all these other former Nick Saban assistants that, you know, like you said, that bowed down to him. And it was never like that with Jimbo Fisher. So it's giving you a little context to what, you know, what happened and what boiled over here. So your reaction to those comments and this?
Well, it's great information to realize that they were working together that closely. I mean, they you can look at them now being head coaches as long as they have, that you might think that they always have been head coaches, right? But the fact that they have worked that closely together and you see the egos in place, like Bobby Bowden, how big a deal he is. Are you a Bobby Bowden guy? Are you a Joe Paterno guy? Are you a, you know, these big icons, Nick Saban, and Alabama's had a couple of them with Bear Bryant as well. So that just puts a whole different context into it. He knows a lot of what went on behind the scenes and probably, you know, he's fired up, competitive, and Jimbo Fisher's willing to say stuff, and Nick Saban went too far. I mean, it's simple. He did such a good job of just explaining things. Even if he had an agenda, most of what he said, 90% was just factual. And then he shouldn't be firing off at Deion Sanders, Jimbo Fisher, Texas A&M. He shouldn't have said that. And so whatever heat he gets from that, he deserves. And so, but it's, they're getting after it because what does Nick Saban do? He kind of is the guy that thinks he has the highest ground, right? ESPN shows him, he probably doesn't like the media at all, but he's on ESPN's College Game Day every week, right? He'll give him a couple of good minutes of smiles on his face when he's probably the last guy in the world who wants to deal with the media. But he goes, okay, I'm the Alabama coach. In this case, he's doing what? Calling behind the scenes and saying, you know, man to man, I'm going to call this guy, have a conversation, and handle it the way I should, not through the media. Old school people would say, that's the way you should do it. But Deion Sanders said, no, don't do that. Don't talk trash publicly where millions of people see it and then act like it's all erased by a few words behind the scenes. So it's kind of interesting. We're in a different era. It's like, no, Nick, you've gone publicly, and Jimbo Fisher, who will be at a coach's meeting with him not too far away, right, when the SEC coaches get together, and he's like, I'm not taking his call. We're done.
This is awesome. I'm reading this article as well, and they're breaking down some of the things that now everyone's just talking. Like, hey, let me tell you what used to happen here. Matt Mauch, who was the quarterback on LSU's 2003 national championship team, recalled many practices where Fisher would run out to the field disheveled. Mauch would ask what was wrong, and Fisher would say Saban spent all day scripting the practice and then gave Fisher 10 minutes to script 80 plays. Sometimes Jimbo didn't know his place and would get upset about how practice was organized, a former staffer said. Former LSU linebackers coach Mike Collins laughs, remembering how Fisher had to give the offensive script to Saban, and then the defense got to run the entire series knowing the offensive script. And so
that
Jimbo
is,
would get pissed
right there,
off about
anyway,
that,
there
too.
Is, there is insight, Stephen, that you can extrapolate in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
These head coaches are head coaches of the whole team, but sometimes they cannot put away their ego of what their expertise is, right? What is Nick Saban? Defensive guy. So isn't it weird that he really wants to win the battles out there? If he's in charge of the defense a little bit more than the offense, he wants practice to go so that the defense works a little bit better. And this whole scripting stuff and following the rules is one of the contentious things that goes on every staff. Because the offensive coordinator and the defensive coordinator who work for these universities supposedly are on the same team, but at practice, especially in spring ball when they compete against each other, they're going at it like it's a real game. And the head coach is the judge and jury, and if you get dogged by – if you're the offensive coordinator and the defense beats the hell out of you that day, out-strategizes you, you're getting yelled at. And you're not getting a warm hug and say we're all together. No, but you know what they'll often do? They'll say, here's the script today. No blitzes during this period. And then the defensive coordinator will go off script and blitz. And the offensive coordinator is going, I'm playing by the rules.
There you go. You'll love this. So Mauch said, that's where the competition came in. Whenever it would be offense versus defense, Fisher did everything in his power to win. He'd draw up trick plays or adjust outside of the purpose of the drill. Jimbo would try to pencil whip Nick to win the drill, a staffer said. And Nick would say, that's not what it's about. We're trying to get better, getting ready for an opponent. That's not how they're going to do it in a game. And then they'd start arguing about
this. This happens all the time, this kind of stuff.
Right? It's great.
But the head coach, a great head coach would be able to create an environment where, yeah, they compete, but they do follow the rules because there's a purpose bigger than this 10-minute stretch, okay? But when the head coach is trying to have one side win because that's kind of his expertise, then that's total baloney, right? So your subordinate, the offensive coordinator, is getting dogged by the stuff that you're implementing or setting the rules, or here's how we're going to do this period, plan your plays to get this purpose, but then he circumvents it, and then he does what he wants to do. And the greatest example, and probably the only one that's really, really, really public, is Buddy Ryan, who said, screw you, Mike Ditka, and the offense of the Chicago Bears. Remember the great Bears teams?
46 in 80, defense.
83, 84, 85. The defensive players, he tried to make them their own unit. He's like, screw, when we go to practice, screw the fact that we're not supposed to hit the quarterback. You know, level him. Think only about the defense. Think only about what I'm doing. And he was out of control, just doing what he wanted to do. That kind of friction, which is so public for the Bears, is always with these programs.
We'll take a break. We'll play more Jimbo Fisher comments after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. All right, play Jimbo Fisher number 6. Here's more Jimbo Fisher now talking about more about Nick Saban.
It's amazing. Some people think they're God. Go dig into how God did his deal. You may find out about a guy that a lot of things you don't want to know. We built him up to be the czar of football. Go dig into his past or anybody that's ever coached with him. You can find out anything you want to find out, what he does and how he does it. And it's despicable. It really is. And it's a shame we have to sit up here and have this conversation about things we do. And it personal to us, yes, it is. It's personal to A&M. It's personal to our players. It's personal to our coaches and everybody involved. And I know the guy. Know him really well. It's amazing that we're allowed to do those things. It's really despicable. And I hate it for our players who are coming here, who did things the right way, have done things the right way, and will continue to do things the right way. I apologize to you, the people who insult you publicly the way they're doing it. And our fans, I apologize to you guys for people saying those things about Texas A&M. But promise you this, there are no violations. There are nothing wrong. It's the second time we've had to do this with grown men who don't get their way and want to pout, throw a fit, and act up. Just go ask all the people who work for him. You'll know exactly what he's about. I always said this. My dad always told me this. When people show you who they are, believe them. He's showing you who he is.
And so, I bet you, Stan, I mean, you're listening to that. That he's going in on Nick Saban. And look, we're talking about this in the break. I listened to Paul Feinbaum on ESPN Radio earlier before our show.
He's Mr. SEC if people don't know who he is
media. And he said, look, Saban's going to take a hit here. Because now you're going to have some investigative reporters that maybe want to start digging into the stuff, maybe want to write a quick book, or just take advantage of this. We already have this article of The Athletic about the kind of icy relationship that Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban have had. Other former assistants that maybe don't have a great relationship with Saban are going to want to speak up now, and He's already losing the public relations battle, the public perception battle. What's he calling out Deion Sanders for? In Jackson State, they're not a threat to him, and he calls and that just makes him look petty and makes him look bad. And the public's going to side with Deion. He's going to lose that war. And so Paul Feinbaum, like you said, he's the media guy when it comes to the SEC. He thinks now it's not going to take away his legacy and the titles that he's won, but Nick Saban's reputation is going to take a hit here, and he's going to be the one that is going to, when this is all said into the dust, it comes out looking bad here. And he already is, kind of, right?
Yes, when he just spoke like a computer and stated how things are and what some of the options are and what might happen, he did a great service. I mean, he did the best job I've heard of someone talking about these things when he wasn't speaking as the Alabama coach. But as soon as he let his guard down and started whining about the Alabama coaching, him being the Alabama coach and things changing, that does not make any sense. When you're at the top of the world, the old statement is you don't want to reshuffle the deck. I mean, he has thought of as the greatest college football coach in the history of college football. He won a national championship at LSU, and he's rolling at Alabama, right? I mean, just being the best coach at Alabama all time would be a hard, hard fight with Bear Bryant. But Nick Saban is up at that pedestal. He has no reason to reshuffle the deck and get into issues that affect his reputation. He can adjust. He can get money. This is just not very smart of him at all, because he went after Jimbo, and I didn't realize how much Jimbo knew him. I mean, I think of Jimbo Fisher as a coach in the SEC, feisty guy, was at Florida State. I didn't realize, wait a second, they coached together that long? And there are always stories if you talk to all these assistants. And Nick Saban probably didn't treat them all just fine. There's a lot of people who are willing to probably step up and talk about things. And like you said, what's Deion Sanders done other than take a highly compensated career that he had and decide to go do something else? Like he said, he doesn't make $1 million as the head coach at Jackson State. Historically black colleges are becoming more relevant because of Deion Sanders. They're getting on TV. He's giving kids an option to go play at a school like that. He is coaching and trying to win, just like Nick Saban, as a legitimate guy. Deion Sanders is neon. His reputation is so high, he doesn't need to go expose himself as coach. What happens if his team ends up being 2-10? His reputation could go down. I mean, Deion's just doing everything right, and he knows how to handle public relations. You don't mess with this media guy, okay? Even Jimbo Fisher's easier for Nick Saban to go after. But there's no way that anything comes of this other than we're entertained here in Kansas City, even. We are highly entertained. And at the end of the day, how can Nick Saban's reputation be better than it was 2 weeks ago? There's no way. I mean, he is digging himself a hole that he should have never got involved with.
Here, Jimbo Fisher says that he is he's done with Nick Saban.
Have you had any contact with Nick since?
No. Oh, he's called.
You just didn't take the call?
Not going to. We're done.
And
he showed you who he is.
And then I just wanted to...
He's the greatest ever, huh?
And then I just wanted
when you
to
got make, all the advantages.
Uh-huh.
It's easy.
And I just wanted to just put it point blank. So no players in you're saying that no players.
There's no law of anything we ever promised, done, anything that goes against the laws of the state of Texas, and it's insulting to say a 17-year-old and his family broke laws. No.
Nate, I'm sure that you would like to hear Jimbo Fisher once again reference sliced bread, the message board poster who started a lot of this that irritated Jimbo Fisher. Here once again is Jimbo mentioning sliced bread.
I know everyone saw the initial post from sliced bread or whatever, but where do you feel like this is coming from?
You got me. Sliced bread. Well, but I mean, when coaches say that, come on, man. Especially, never mind. The operation and tactics of certain people who say them, and anybody who coached with him know them, and anybody out there in this business knows it. Amazing. Just go where he's been.
And I know that you don't necessarily, you can't have the conversation with people who do NILs or have that contact, but would you like to see the collective that does?
I would like to find unified rules across this country to put things in place. That's what I want. And what I don't know what those are. I'm not smart enough to figure it out. I don't know what the antitrust laws, all those bylaws, so the government needs to step in because this is these things here. And what's funny, in that talk, right before he said that about us, wasn't he soliciting funds from the crowd? It's amazing, wasn't it?
The left, Rob.
When you walk on water, I guess, don't matter.
How important was it for you to have this press conference so that you could defend your players and your
program? I'm not defending anybody. I'm just giving you the truth. Because I have nothing to hide. I have nothing to hide, and our program has nothing to hide. It'd be interesting if everybody could say that.
Okay, let's roll through these before we hear Stan's reaction. Stan's, I can't describe Stan the look on Stan's face right now. This is gold.
Can we get back on 38th right. spot?
Let's see. Here's Jimbo telling us that I don't lie.
They have collectives. I know there's a collective here. I don't know who's got what, when's got what. Had no idea last year. That is not what we do or what we're about.
I was gonna say that's by design. You saying, hey, I'm staying out of this.
Yeah, I mean. I have no sponsorships in those things. And that's the truth. Listen, I'm going to tell you one thing. You can call me anything you want to call me. You ain't calling me a cheat. I don't cheat and I don't lie. So I learned that when I was a kid. If you did, the old man slapped you side of the head. Maybe somebody should have slapped him. That's one thing you don't. Now you're fooling with their name. That don't. You're fooling with Texas A&M's name. You're saying with those kids' name and our name. I'll put it with any of them.
I kind of feel like he might know what's going on a little bit more than he's saying, but that, you know, I don't want to get slapped upside the head. Finally, they asked him about seeing Nick Saban in the future. I don't know if that'll happen at SEC Media Days, but maybe we should send Lebo down there just in case. Here's Jimbo on seeing Nick Saban in the future.
Yeah, Jimbo, SEC spring meetings are coming up, the Media Days in a couple of months, and then October 8th, what do you think that's is it going to be awkward?
And Walker, about what?
When you have to say or have to.
I don't mind confrontation. Live with it my whole life. Kind of like it myself.
Anything else, Rob, and then Travis?
Backing away from it wasn't the way I was raised.
Coach, what do you say to your players about something like this?
Keep doing the right things and believe in yourself. And I'm sorry that people say those things about you, but I will defend you. That's what it's about. Talking about setting examples for players and creating value and all those good, you know, talks we have, he has. You know what I mean? Live it. It's amazing.
Go Travis and then Brent.
When you talk about uniform legislation.
Setting a hell of an example.
When you talk about uniform legislation, would you see that the schools be able to have a little bit more ability to
I don't know that. I don't know what's right. It just needs to be uniformed across the board. And it's hard because the government's gonna have to get involved with it. I'm not into that. I just know that what we did was nothing wrong, was not done the wrong way. Nothing was promised, nothing was deal, and we didn't buy any players.
You've been in this business a long time.
Seen a lot of things. It's disgusting to what we're into right now. Right. Especially by the people who are throwing the darts. Who have no glass in their house.
My question was, is this the most upset, disappointed, angry you've been about something in your coaching career?
It's despicable for what it does for the sport. and the operations, the way things were done the other way, when the parity was there, like we said, never has been parity. Certain people never follow the rules anyway.
Stan, take it from here. Just you got it. Give us sum all this up. You got 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes, whatever you want. There's just so much there to unpack, and I know that you've been delighted to listen to all this, Stan. So,
wow, tough job to summarize. Let's say this. If you listen to their statements, they both crazily agree that we need to have some new standardized rules. Wherever college football was, it was never completely fair. There were things that went on, and everyone took care of the advantages that they had the opportunity to do within the rules. Now, because of court cases, and Nick Saban said that, well, it's not the NCAA being inept and stupid like everyone wants to say it is. It's the court cases that are in our judicial system that are legitimate and have been played out that have forced openings of rules, and that's really taken away the NCAA's ability to have the old set of rules work. And they both say, we need to get changes. So it's weird that they agree in a lot of ways. Tell us what the new rules are. Let's work with it. Jimbo Fisher basically, though, is saying we have currently a set of rules we think are in play, and we're following them. So until they get changed, and they need to be changed, and maybe the government's going to have to get involved to do these kind of things, until then, we're following the rules, and don't say we're not. So that was one thing that's interesting. The other thing I've got to smile about is it's such a small world. And you guys know that. As you get older, you realize how small of a world it is. And I could sit here and give you 5 examples of things that happened to me yesterday where I go, I can't believe that person's doing that job. I'm not going to go into these stories, even though you would know who I was talking about. Like, I can't believe I talked to them. I haven't talked to them in 5 years. Those kind of things. I know Daryl Ray Dickey. His dad was my head coach. Jim Dickey was the head coach at K-State when they went to the first bowl game ever in 1982. Daryl Ray Dickey was the quarterback. He is the quarterback's coach for Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M right now. Now, why does that matter? I don't know, but it puts a smile on my face because I was at A&M within the last few years, and Jimbo was the head coach at A&M, and I was with Daryl Ray, and we went through the whole facility. I didn't run into Jimbo, but it just seems so weird that I know these people. I know Daryl Ray Dickey so well, and he's right in the middle of this, and that just shows you how small the world it is. The things about we're going to expose this and expose that from practice or whatever, that'll be very interesting to the public because they don't have a real feel for all the things that are going on, not just recruiting violations, just stuff that happens everywhere. And Jimbo Fisher, the way he talks, reminds me of them. He's the new Buddy Ryan. I mean, Buddy Ryan, to the day he died, was never, ever nice about things. He was said, you know, I'm great. I do things the right way. And screw the Chicago Bears who weren't on defense. I don't care about the offensive players. I care about the defensive players, and I'm good at it. I mean, Jimbo Fisher is willing to say things, fire, believe in himself, and doesn't care whose toes he steps on. But, hey, Nick Saban stuck his hand into the beehive. So if he gets stung, he deserves it. This guy has more media training than anybody. I told you, he's on ESPN's College Game Day almost every week. He knows that Paul Feinbaum and the SEC, where it matters more and college football is the biggest thing, his voice is the biggest. So he knows all the media issues. Like, why would you mess with Deion Sanders in May of 2022? I mean, these kind of mistakes. So here we go. It's just unbelievably fun. But if you can sort through, guys, kind of some of the fun and fireworks, there are some things where these guys actually agree. And we are all waiting to see how it's going to sort out. And how it's going to change. And what's the words everyone's using now, guys? It's a wild, wild west.
Right.
We've heard it said in basketball, in football. We don't know where it's going to go. We don't know if Congress is going to have to get involved. You know, at the end of the day, there's a decent chance, because it is business and it is about money. Right, Nate? Before or after the Bloody Marys that you've been drinking, it's always been about money.
Now you better answer them.
Right? And so they may end up have to pay these players, you know, provide health insurance and pay these players and treat it like a mini NFL. They may have to go to that. That may be the only answer that sorts things out. But right now, there are so many things going on. I'll say this as a conclusion, has nothing to do with the battle of these two, because it's going to be fun to watch, and Deion will win his little media wars as well. What's happening in college athletics appears to be, this is the thing I would make a message to you, it appears to be really leaning toward the student athletes about getting an opening to have things change in their favor, right? Doesn't it appear that way?
True.
You can transfer when you want to. You can get paid legitimate money while you're in college. All these issues are looking to be in the players' favor. I'm telling you, the players will not win this battle. It's going to end up being worse for more players than it's better for the few. And I'm not talking about money. I'm talking about really more other issues. And here's one. I want to tell you something that's come out as a new rule in college football. And I don't think it's a good rule at all. You can have 85 scholarships, and that's like a salary cap. College football has been great the last 25 years because with 85 scholarships, Oklahoma can't sign, you know, 107 guys and keep them from going to Oklahoma State. That's the way it used to work when there are unlimited signings. You can only sign 25 a year, and you have 85 total on scholarship. The 85 total is really good. But the other thing that was really good for the athletes was that any coach could only sign 25 each year.
Right.
Natural attrition, guys getting hurt, deciding they don't want to be football players, and all those things meant that you could sign 25 four straight years and still have 85 on scholarship and even give them some walk-on some scholarships. But you had to invest in that 25 and work and develop those kids. You couldn't see them leave because if 20 of your 25 kids left every year, you might only have 20 or 25 guys on scholarship. And it would take you 4 or 5 years to develop and build, right? Do you realize that college football now has changed their rules and they allow unlimited signings for the next 2 years to fill your roster? You're not limited to 25. So you're a sophomore at a school working, maybe not a starter, but you know, working and getting better and maybe a starter before you leave and contribute to old university. Guess what? They can now tell you, get lost, go to the transfer portal. These coaches know how to say it without saying it. They can shove you to the transfer portal, and the kid cannot admit that he got cut from the team because you don't want that out in public. So you say what? I'm going to the transfer portal. But it's been, they could restock their roster every year. Someone next year could sign 85 new college football players. It's been that way in college basketball. I don't like it. But in football, about developing your program and working with these kids and being committed to them, you as a coach need to keep that kid around and have him be successful, or you will be so short on scholarships. That just ended for 2 years, and it may be forever. And you know who's going to lose? The players, because you go in as a freshman, and if you don't spark and play well and show the coaches that you're someone to keep the next year, they might run you out right then. And that's the dirty little secret. These coaches know how to run kids off, and now they can sign unlimited amount of people. Every kid is at risk. And when they come to these parents and say, we're bringing them to the university, we're going to help them with academics, we're going to do a lot of things, forget the NIL, talk about the realistic things. Grow young boys into men, make them football players, and all those things, that's going to be all thrown out the window. The NFL is going to be more stable because they have to sign a 3-year contract. You know, if they sign you to a 3-year contract, the player's going to get his money, right? And if you get cut after year one, you still can get paid. But now, these colleges, they can run these kids off. This new rule is a giant, giant variable. Think about this. You're no longer limited to 25 new scholarships starting for the next 2 years. It's called an exception, but it might be forever. You think the Wild Wild West was wild. It's just been upped very quietly. Watch what happens now, but you won't be able to watch it because you know what? No player's going to admit that he got cut. No one's going to say.
Oh, just like, look at basketball. When
they're just going to say, I want to transfer. Yeah. And it's really like you call your mom and dad and you say, they told me I'm not going to play here anymore. And they do not want to give me a scholarship next year in their own. You know, they said it in a way that I know, so I need to go find another scholarship. So I'm going to tweet out, thanks to old university, I enjoyed it here, and now I've choose to transfer. It's okay if the player wants to transfer. What I'm sickened by is how these kids are going to be shoved to the transfer portal and just treated like pieces of meat. And there's no commitment to even invest and work with those kids. Because every football player that goes on to these big-time universities, I will tell you, will gain between 20 and 50 pounds before they're ready to play. Does that make sense?
Sure.
You have to gain a ton of weight. So when you're a high school player and you weigh 275, you're not going to play until you get up over 300. And even the dudes that are 175 pounds are going to be weighing 195. after a couple years before they go out and really become factors in the world. You are a different person when you are finished product with a nutrition, weightlifting, and everything else, and they're not even going to give them time. If you don't spark in front of the coach's eye, he's going to say, get out of here. And that's dangerous.
That is was one hell of an hour and a half with Stan Weber. Stan, I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. We will be right back after this with a forecast from Gary Lezak on WHB. Hey, let me tell you something. That was great. And I was excited because, you know, timing's everything. To have all that stuff come out yesterday and to have Stan Weber in today, what better person to have in to comment on all those comments from Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban. So thank you to Stan Weber. Now let's praise Gary Lezak, because Gary, I like this weather that's getting ready to happen. I like it when it's nice and cool and comfortable, and that's what you've got for me, right?
Yeah, Marco said that Dan got an hour and a half, and he's giving me an hour and a half.
Wow.
Minus an hour and 28 minutes.
If you want a break on time, you can come back and rejoin us in the 8 o'clock hour if you have some content for us.
Yeah, it's okay. Uh-huh. I'll move on to my workout and walk with the dogs, but a crazy. This is the anniversary, 65 years of the Ruskin Heights tornado back on May 20th, 1957, the worst tornado to ever hit the Kansas City metro area. Ruskin Heights, Hickman Mills, just 15 minutes from downtown Kansas City, was destroyed that day. And on KSHB.com, you can go to read the story I wrote and the video we put together for as I interviewed Jim Crawley, who was 9 years old then. So that was 65 years ago today. And then you go back to May 20th, 2013, 9 years ago today, one of the worst tornadoes ever hit the United States, killing 40 people in Oklahoma, in Moore, Oklahoma. So that's the last EF5 tornado in the United States, Moore, 9 years ago. So thank goodness they happen so rarely and not today. Today is going to be cloudy. It's going to be nice. It's going to be cooler. It's going to be mostly around 75 this morning, dropping into the 60s to near 70. So a nice day. Chance of rain is low, even though it looks like it's going to rain. It may rain briefly, but that's it. And then tomorrow, I know we got graduations. We got all kinds of activities outside planned. Cloudy, just a chance of a shower or two or three, maybe some drizzle. Nothing, not a really wet day. It may rain just a little bit. Some of the models have no rain at all. So, but it's going to be in the 50s.
Yes.
So hopefully you can enjoy that. And then two dad jokes real quick.
Okay.
I had a game of quiet tennis today. It's just like regular tennis, but without the racket.
That's good. I like that one.
Oh, my God. David likes it.
I do like that one.
Okay. My girlfriend came to me with a balloon that said, will you marry me? So I popped the question.
Oh, jeez. You know what? I'll say this. Those two were better than your last few efforts, so I will give those both a thumbs up.
Okay, good. What, Nate?
Yeah. Nate just passed out because he's had three or four Bloody Marys, apparently. So he's.
I've only had half a Bloody Mary so far, but I'll probably have three before the show's over.
Right. Not a surprise.
I got one that somebody came out here at the Advent Health Championship and told me a dad joke for you.
Is it called, why, hey, Nate, let's take a break? Or no? Not?
Why are there no casinos in the Sahara?
Why?
Why?
Too many cheetahs.
That's pretty good. But you got to emphasize too many cheetahs.
Cheetahs.
Love it. Right. I love it.
Thank you, Gary.
All right, everyone. Thank you. You're welcome. Have a great Friday, everybody. Here is Pro Partners Healthcare's Dr. Troy Burns.
Thanks, Gary. Did you know 82 million Americans don't have a doctor? If you're proud that you never go to the doctor, we need to talk. If you're ready to meet a physician who can help you be healthier, live longer, and save money on healthcare, give ProPartners a call or check us out on the web at ProPartnersHealthcare.com.
We'll be right back after this on WHB.